Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Today we're on lesson 215, and we're going to continue now with Exodus chapter 3 and verse 6, where we stopped last time. Moses and I are standing before the bush, and the holy angel, who is also God, who is also Elohim and Jehovah, is the one speaking to him. And so we read in verse 6, "Moreover, he said, I am the God, or I am the Elohim of your father, and the Elohim of Abraham, and the Elohim of Isaac, and the Elohim of Jacob." And basically that means I am the deity. And you see that when you say I am the deity, you still have to have a name. And all the deities that people worshipped at the time, you know, obviously they are not true, they all had names. So a deity, Elohim, when you say Elohim, you still don't know what is the name of the deity. And so we have to go beyond that. So, you know, when we use the word God for Elohim, we have to understand that God by itself is not a holy name. Some people think that it is, because if it is a true God, that's one thing, but still it's not the name of him, it's just a deity, just like saying that, you know, the president or the ruler, you see. And when you say president or ruler, or whatever it may be, you know, you're not revealing yet the identity of the person. And with God, the identity of God is revealed not by the saying God, you see, but by the actions that he does. And so if he's the God of Abraham, that already tells you something more specific, and Isaac and Jacob. And if he's a healer, and if he's a deliverer, and if he's a redeemer, or as David would say, he's my buckler, my high tower, he's the rock of Israel, you see, he's a savior. There you begin to describe your deity, and all those become his names. And his name, Yehovah, or Yehovah in modern Hebrew, means the was, is, and the will be. So he's the eternal. There you are really getting to the name of God. By saying God himself, you still haven't said much in that sense. You just said, you know, all, you know, ruler, or president, almighty one. And obviously, if you're referring to the right one, then you're, in your mind, you know whom you are talking about. But by itself, as I said, you know, the word Elohim could be either a true one or a false one. It's just a general title. And so he says, I am that deity, I am that Elohim. And the word deity, you know, would be closer to really translate the word God or Elohim. And he said, I am that one that led the fathers, walked with them, talked with them, gave them the promises. And so God introduces himself by what he is, not just an empty title or a general one, a generic one. And so he said that to Moses, and Moses hid his face. And why does he do it? Because he was afraid to look upon God. And he realizes this is the real spirit being that was leading his fathers, that is the true, you know, creator of the heaven and the earth, the God of the universe. And so the knowledge was, you know, that you do not look on the face of God, because otherwise you are going to die. So that's a natural thing that he does. Otherwise he really didn't have to be afraid. Abraham was not afraid, but Isaac and others, when he appeared to them, but they were much closer to him. And Moses is, for the first time, he's introduced to this being, and obviously in a very unique circumstance that the fathers did not. He did not appear in the bush in a flaming fire. And so we read in verse 7, now, and Jehovah said, you see, now he's not saying I'm Elohim, now he says Jehovah. So now he's introducing that, when he introduced himself, you know, generically as the deity of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, now he's introducing his name. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people. And when you see that in Lord said, what basically it means, this is what God is dictating to Moses. He's not saying to Moses, I'm Jehovah at this point. So still, at this point, Moses is still with that question. Okay, you are the deity of the fathers, but he still does not know at this point, at least he's not introduced at this point with the name of God. And so we read here, and Jehovah said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people that are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their pains, and I am come down to deliver them out of the hands of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land unto the good land and large, and unto a land flowing with milk and honey, and to the place of the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Amorite and the Perizzite. See how specific God is, you know, in the details that he gives. And the Hivite could have just said, you know, the land of Canaan in general, and the Jebusite. And mind you, the statement that he makes here, which, you know, most of us would read over and would not even fully comprehend what we are reading if we don't pay attention to it. When he says that when he says to Moses that he saw the affliction of his people and all the afflictions that they go through because of the Egyptians, he says also that I am come down. What does it mean, I am come down? You see, God is in heaven. He can deliver them from heaven. He doesn't have to come down and deliver them. And yet, remember what he said to Jacob. Now you go down to Egypt. You know, Jacob literally goes down to Egypt. You go south, you go down. And then God said to him also that I too will come down with you. Literally, he's going to come down from heaven and be there in the land of Egypt. So for all that period of time that the children of Israel were in Egypt, God was not in the land of Israel. You see? He was there from the days of Abraham with him and the others. When he came down to talk to them, he literally came down and walked on the earth. And then now that his people went down to Egypt, he literally went down there and walked in their midst and spoke to them. And who knows how many times he appeared there in Egypt in person to Jacob. We don't know that. He didn't choose to record that. And so that's what he's saying here. I'm literally coming down to deliver them out. Not only he is coming down to Mount Sinai where he was speaking now to Moses, but he's literally going to go down to Egypt. He's going to go down there. He's going to stand on the foot, you know, that is on the land of the soil of Egypt. And there he's going to do the work that he was going to do in the midst of Egypt. And so he says he's going to come down there and he's going to bring his people out of that land. Just like later on you would read, out of Egypt I've called my son, as it says through the prophets, and later on that was applied to Jesus Christ in specific, because again, when Jesus Christ, and now this is the person that became Jesus Christ, when Jesus Christ went down to Egypt, now the Father went down with him. In essence, if he didn't come down to this earth, literally, he went down with him in the sense of watching over him, protecting him, and his eyes were upon him. And whether he came down literally, we don't know. I guess that's something we'll find out in the future. And so, this is what God is saying to Moses in verse 9, and now behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come unto me. And obviously they've been crying for a long time, and when he wanted to deliver them earlier through Moses, they were not about to listen. And Moses himself was not fully ready, apparently, from God's point of view, because you see, the way he was dealing with the problem is using his own might, and God has always that principle that he's teaching his servants. It's not by might of man, it's not by power, but it is by my Holy Spirit. And Moses understood that he was going to be the judge of Israel, the deliverer of Israel, and he must have had communications with God to understand that, as Stephen made it very plain. And the Holy Spirit that spoke through Stephen made it very plain that he already was fully aware of the fact that God used him and was going to use him as a deliverer. Only Israel did not understand that, and they rejected that at that point. But at the same time also, Moses, who was a warrior, he was going to deal, you know, with Israel as a warrior. He was going to be a deliverer as a warrior, and God was not interested in that, because God needed a shepherd for Israel, not a warrior. God is the one that was going to do the war, the battle. He is the Lord of the host of the armies of Israel. And he did not need another warrior. There he needed a shepherd to bring his people out of that land. And to become a shepherd, when you are a general, a warrior, a conqueror, obviously you're going to have some kind of an alteration in your nature, in your mind, in the manner in which you do things. And for that, God, in essence, gave him a period of 40 years to, in essence, alter that nature that was in Moses, the nature of the general, of the conqueror, who does things, you know, according to a man of war, and he generally, you know, wanting a shepherd to lead his people, Even though sometimes, you know, many of the shepherds that he had were also warriors like David, but the nature that he wanted as a leader is first the nature of a shepherd, and after that the warrior, not the other way around. The emphasis should be on being a shepherd. And so he tested also David and gave him a period of time. Even though he anointed him, he still gave him a period of time to learn that, to become a shepherd more than just a warrior. And that's how he wants his people treated. And spiritually later on, when he came down in the flesh and he appointed leaders over his people, he wanted to make sure that they are shepherds in nature, who like him, who is a shepherd, and he emphasized that role, you see. He did not emphasize his role as a general, as a Lord of hosts, which he is also, but generally speaking, the main role of the leader is to be a shepherd, not a warrior. Warrior you do now and then, when you need to. But on a daily basis, you need to be a shepherd, and Moses needed to learn that. And so he was given 40 years. And that's, you know, that's the reason when God chooses men to lead his people, he wants to see those qualities of a shepherd in them. And you can see, as you know, the father-in-law of Moses, his name was the shepherd of God, Reuel. You see, and all the leaders of Israel, in terms of their spiritual leaders, God calls them shepherds, and his people the pasture. And he himself is the chief shepherd. You see? So this was a very important key element here. And at this point, apparently, he feels that the children of Israel are now ready for the deliverance. You know, they got a little bit more softened in the past 30 years or 40 years that Moses was away. And so that's what he's saying here. And now I've seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppress them. In verse 10, come now, therefore, and I will send you unto Pharaoh, that you may bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. It does not mean that Moses is going to be the deliverer in the sense of the real deliverer. God is the one. But God is now going to go down with him, hold his hand, be with him, strengthen, you know, his hand, and guide him in all those things that are going to happen now in Egypt. And verse 11, and Moses said unto God, to Elohim, who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? You know, I'm just a shepherd now. I'm in 40 years. You know, I'm not a warrior. I'm not a general as I used to be. I have no armies. I'm a totally different person. I just don't think like a man of war. And when you go to Egypt, you know, and to Pharaoh, and tell him that, you got to be a man of war. You have to withstand him and fight him. And so you can see that Moses totally changed. Or earlier, he would have said, oh, yes, I'm ready. I'm going. See, a man of war would say that. But now he's a shepherd. He doesn't think that way. And so in verse 12, God said to him, and he said, certainly I will be with you. And this shall be the token unto you that I have sent you. When you have brought forth the people out of Egypt, you shall serve Elohim upon this, or God, upon this mountain. Well, that still doesn't mean much to Moses, because, you know, what does that mean? How do I go through the whole thing to begin with? And Moses said unto God, behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, the Elohim, or the deity, you know, the ruler, you see, of your fathers, you know, which is a generic name, deity. I mean, by now they've had a lot of deities of Egypt, and specific ones. So I'm going to tell them, you know, the deity of your fathers sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, what is his name? Okay, well, you know, deity is fine, you know, that's a generic term, but what's the name of the deity? So Elohim by itself is not the name of God, and God is not the name of God. This is just a generic name, and a lot of people don't even think about it. Well, they constantly, you know, use that terminology, and in vain most of the time. Oh God, that's all they say. And to begin with, it's not really his name. So ironically, you know, when they say Oh God, they're not really taking his name in vain when they just say Oh God, because that's not his name. It's just general terminology used for the rulers, just like saying Oh ruler. Oh, deity. And so, and he said, I'm going to ask, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? You know, by what name you want me to introduce you to them? And God says something very interesting here, because he'd never said that before that. He said, Elohim said to Moses, well, in English, was translated to I am that I am. Listen to what he said. He said to him, Ehyeh asher ehyeh. You see, that's something that you never see in the Bible before that, to this very point. Ehyeh asher ehyeh. And Moses never heard that. What does it mean, ehyeh asher ehyeh? Ehyeh in Hebrew means, I will be that I will be. And this is what he's saying to them, whatever I'm going to do to Egypt and for Israel, this is where I'm going to be. You see, if I'm going to smite the firstborn of Egypt, then I'm going to be known as the one, as the deity that smote the firstborn of Egypt. If I'm going to destroy Egypt or Pharaoh, that's the kind of a name I'm going to be known by, the destroyer of Egypt. You see? And if I'm going to bring you out of this land into the land of honey, and if I'm going to be your healer, if I'm going to be your redeemer and your deliverer and your buckler and your tower and so forth, as David, you know, would use that terminology, this is what I am. In other words, I'm not like the other gods of Egypt. You have a god of the Nile. Well, that's all he is. Very limited. You see? Well, what's a god of the Nile going to do when he's in the desert, when he's in the mountains? You know, when you need rain, when you need, fertile land or fertile family and things like that. You know, he's totally incompetent because all he can do is just take care of the Nile. He says, no, that's not me. You know, in other words, your concept, the concept of the children of Israel now is so limited by the many gods that they have. I'm not that kind of a god. Whatever I'm going to do, this is what is my name. You see? And that's what he's emphasizing here. And so he did not say, I am that I am. And nor did Jesus Christ say that. I am that I am when he came, you know, even though that was translated to be that way. That's not correct, because he didn't say that. I am means Anochi. You see, he did not say Anochi or Ani, which means I am. He said Ehyeh, I will be. Something totally different. And it's interesting that even here in the translation in the English, even though it was done by a rabbi, he basically used the King James version for the English translation, the terminology that he saw there, you know, because that was familiar with the people of his day. But that's not correct. You know, that's a perversion of Scripture and totally missing the point of what God was trying to convey to Moses. And that's not a faithful scribe when you think about it. And so this is what God tells Moses. And that's what he records for all of us to understand. In other words, many times when we read the Bible, we have to understand. The reason why there is a lot of confusion and much misunderstanding is because people read the words without asking the questions. Okay, this is what it says, but what does it mean? You see, for that, you don't need your spirit, you need the Spirit of God to lead you to truth. And when people rely on their spirit, on their understanding, well, each one comes up with his own idea. And so we have divisions in every area, and that should not be. And so sometimes just studying the context or going to the original meaning of the word and the background, you know, would help us an awful lot. And so he said, I am that I am. Whatever I'm going to do, this is what my name is going to be. And so he said to him, you shall say unto the children of Israel, Ehyeh has sent me. I will be sent you. Sent me unto you. And of course he was going to explain, you know, what it meant. In other words, whatever God is going to do for you, you're going to know that he is God. If he's going to smite the Nile, it's not that he's the God of the Nile. You see? If he's going to bring this plague or that plague on this God, on that God, or whatever it may be, on the land, on the rain, of everything else, on children, is not what you think in your Egyptian mind now. You see, the Egyptian concepts that now you have developed, an Egyptian nature in essence that you have taken. And so he wanted to totally change their attitude, their understanding and comprehension of their ruler, the divine ruler that they have, who can do everything, and therefore should not be constrained by the terminology that they have for their man-made deities, man-made Elohim. Whatever he's going to do, this is what his name is going to be. And so God has many names, you know, people talking about the sacred name, you know, Yehovah, yes, you know, that basically is the one that is regarded as sacred name, or Yehovah, you see. And so you've got the Yahweh people, you know, which is closer to Yehovah, but it's not still correct. It's not Yahweh, it's Yehovah. You don't have Yah in the beginning, as I explained that several times before that. The Yah, it comes by itself. It comes at the end of the word, but it never comes in the beginning. In the beginning, the Yah turns to Yeh. And so people, you know, do their own thing again. Lean to their own understanding. And so he said to them, whatever I'm going to do, whatever I'm going to do in your sight, this is what my name is going to be. And so he said, you tell them that. Tell them that, Ehyeh, I will be, sent me unto you. And Elohim said, moreover, unto Moses, thus shall you say unto the children of Israel, Yehovah, the Elohim of your fathers, the Elohim of Abraham. So Yehovah is his name, you see. I will be is whatever I'm going to do for you, this is what I'm going to be. This is what my name is going to be. And so, you have to understand that the titles of God are not empty titles. In the old days, you know, the kings used to receive many titles, and that was based on what they were. You know, for example, one of the names of the President of the United States is the Commander-in-Chief. Why? Because he is. So he is what he will be. That's in essence, you know, what God is saying. Whatever I'm going to do for you, this is what I am. And yet, you know, his name is generally is Jehovah, that means the Eternal. And because he's eternal and he can do all things, he's omnipotent, you know, omniscient and all those things, this is what he is. So he said, Yehovah, the Elohim of your fathers, the Elohim of Abraham, the Elohim of Isaac, and the Elohim of Jacob, and God is going to repeat that all the time, has sent me unto you. This is my name forever. And this is my memorial unto all generations. And so the question is, you know, what name is he talking about here in this statement? Is he talking about Ehyeh, I will be, or is he talking about Yehovah, the Elohim of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob? Well, he speaks about all of these. You see, it's not only one in specific, because all of these, and even there, those things are just words, you know, that have a limited description in terms of the human concept, you know, the finite mind that we have. No matter what names he's going to give us, those names still would not encompass his glory and his divinity and his greatness, because we do not have minds to be able to fully comprehend and understand and perceive what he is. You see, so even in those all those names that he revealed to us, and after all, even when he said that his name is Jehovah the Eternal, he's just describing the fact that he's living forever. And that's why we read in the future, you know, the time will come when this Yehovah, when he descends, God is going to give him a name that nobody will know but he, only him. And then he's going to give us also, the saints who are going to become divine beings, a name that only us will know. And we're going to find out exactly what it means. So, you know, we have to understand the concept of a name from the point of view of God, in contrast to that which is the concept of men. You know, we are very limited, and the names that we have to begin with, in the days when they really meant something, and today they don't mean anything, you just give somebody a name, you know, it sounds cute, you like it, you give it a name. But in the old days, you know, they gave names based on certain facts and qualities and events in people's life and when they were born and things like that. And those were, you know, basically their names, and they basically, you know, typified what they were. You know, Edom was called Edom, that means red, because he had the lentil. You know, the red lentil that he got from Jacob, and his name when he was born was called Esau, means hairy, you see. And, you know, that becomes sort of a limiting concept of what the man is. And Jacob, supplanter, and after that changed to Israel, the overcomer, you see. But still, all those things are limited. With God, no name, and all names put together can even begin to really describe him for what he is. So we still have to understand that, you know, when a lot of people are becoming almost to the point of idol worship when it comes to names, you know, sacred names. You know, they want to use this name or that name. It never dawns on them that when you say only one single name, you are limiting God. And if you think of him only in this name, and some people think, well, if I'm going to call him Yeshua, then I'm doing it right, because that's his name, and I should say it in Hebrew. Well, the reality is that if you're using only one name, you're limiting God. No name can limit him. No concept can limit him. And those who do it generally degenerate into idol worship. That's what idol worship was all about. Since they could not conceive completely of what God is, and so they thought,
well, you know, God is this and God is that, and after that, you know, it degenerated into, well, the God that does that is really separate from the other one that does the other thing, and so forth. And, you know, we should not get into that, but understand the whole concept. God has many, many names, and even all those names put together do not really describe Him for what He is. You know, so we should not get into idol worship, you know, when it comes to names, and too many people in our midst are into that, unfortunately. And so He says, this is My name forever, and this is My memorial unto all generations. But He has many names. So every single one of them, you know, He's going to be the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's going to be this, He's going to be that, He's going to be, you know, all kind of things. And He's going to do a lot of things for Israel that He has not done before that. And therefore, He's going to be known also by those names. And whatever other names, is going to be known for eternity as time goes by and things happen. And He does things that maybe He had never done before. And so He would be known by that name also. And so we have to understand when we are reading these kind of things, what does it really mean in the full context? And so He says now to him in verse 16, go and gather all the elders of Israel together and say unto them, and you know, that tells you again about the nature of the slavery that was there. Had they been all in slavery in concentration camps, you know, Moses couldn't do a thing like that. You know, but you know, when you have the false concept of what Israel was going through in Egypt, then, you know, this should be a question. Well, how can you do that? Go and gather all the elders of Israel if all of them are in slavery. You know, all of them are there working, more, you know, all day. How's going to be able to do it? Well, obviously, it was not what people thought it is. The elders of Israel, you know, were in their homes. They were all their people. You know, they didn't go work out there. Were not of much use to the Egyptians in the land, task force of what they had, or the jobs that they gave them to do. The children were not of any use to them. Most women were not. Pregnant women were not. Older ladies were not. You see, all these people were home. And so he could do these kind of things. And the young men that were able, just like the people that go to war, they're the ones that go to war, be it in building or anything else that the Egyptians, you know, wanted them for. And so he says, go and gather all the elders of Israel together and say unto them, Jehovah, the Elohim of your fathers, the Elohim of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob, has appeared unto me, saying, I have surely remembered you. Now all of them know who Jehovah is. You see, even though later on you read in chapter 6 that he made a statement that we have explained before that, when he said, by my name Jehovah was not known unto the fathers, and people read it without understanding what it means, and they form their own doctrines based on that. You see, that's how the blind function, leading to his own understanding. Well, obviously, all of them knew that Jehovah was not an issue. All the fathers knew that. Everybody knew that. And even the Gentiles knew that, even though they did not worship Him, the Eternal, Jehovah. And so he said, you go tell them that, and I remembered you, and seen that which is done to you in Egypt, and I have said, I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt. And all of them knew that, that one of these days God is going to deliver us. But then, on the other hand, because of their bondage that was very harsh, a lot of them gave up the faith. You know, they quit. That faith that they used to have in the deliverance, which was, you know, was being passed on from, you know, Joseph and his brothers to their children and grandchildren. And he said, I'm going to deliver you out of the affliction of Egypt unto the land of the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Amorite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite unto the land flowing with milk and honey. And they shall hearken to your voice. Now the elders were going to listen, you see. As for the people, that was a different story. The elders still, you know, were the wise ones who still remembered, and many of them were not too far removed. And when you understand the genealogy and how long they've been there, they were not too far removed from the sons of Jacob. And they shall hearken unto your voice, he said, and it shall come, you and the elders of Israel, unto the king of Egypt. You see, the freedom of movement. They're not in captivity. They're not in shackles. They're not there in the mud pile. You go to Egypt, you go to the Pharaoh, and remember they all lived in Goshen, and Pharaoh was nearby. And some people, you know, do not fully comprehend that. You could walk over to the palace of the king, because that's where his riches were, in the land of Goshen. That was a fertile land. That's where his gardens were. This is where he dwelt, nearby the land of Goshen, and probably in a part of, you know, the land of Goshen. Certain section of it. And that was the best of the land, and it is this best of the land that he owned, you know, sort of his private garden that he gave to the brothers of Joseph, and to Joseph also. And so Israel remained there and multiplied. And you can imagine how they controlled the economy of the nation because of that. You know, the agriculture that came from there and the cattle and everything else, commerce. And so he says, they shall hearken unto your voice, and you shall, well, he says, you take the elders and you go to Pharaoh, and this is what you're going to say to him. Yehovah, the Elohim of the Hebrews. So, you know, Pharaoh also knows about that name Yehovah. He doesn't, you know, necessarily follow him, but, you know, that name was known. So you tell him, Yehovah, the Elohim of the Hebrews, has met with us. And now let us go, we pray you, 3 days' journey into the wilderness. So mind you, he's not going to Egypt now, and he's not going to the elders of Israel, and he's not going to Pharaoh telling him the name I Am, or Ehyeh. He's just saying the Eternal. So what happened to the name Ehyeh? When he asked him, what is your name? Moses asked him, what is your name? What am I going to tell them? He said, Ehyeh. Which means that that was not the name of God. This is just what God is going to do. You see? And so people, you know, use that I am, and think, you know, this is what he told them. He didn't say that. He just explained to them that whatever God is going to do, this is what he is. So it was an explanation of what God is going to do, not a revelation necessarily of a name per se, in the classic concept of a name. And so this is what he tells Egypt. And he said, let us go, we pray you, 3 days' journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to Jehovah our Elohim. And I know that the king of Egypt will not give you leave to go. So it was going to take 3 days, you know, walking to get to Mount Sinai. In the south, and of course some people today come up with the idea that it was in Saudi Arabia. And Moses here is being told that it's going to be a 3-day journey to that Mount Sinai, and then he's going to tell that to Egypt, to the Pharaoh. Now, reality is, this is not what God was going to do. God was literally going to bring his people totally out of the land of Egypt into the land of Canaan. So why just, in essence, you might say, deceive Pharaoh by telling him, well, we're just going to go for 3 days to the Mount of God and sacrifice, you know, meaning, you know, after that we're going to come back. And some people would say that, and if you, you know, we're going to take it in today's language or that of the past, you know, if you tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, you even said the truth here. And God is not telling Moses to speak the truth. You see, a lot of people are confused by that, and they don't understand, as God also taught us. You've got to be shrewd as a serpent, harmless as a dove. You don't have to tell everything. It's true that they're going to go to the Mount of God. You don't have to tell everything, you see. And sometimes not having wisdom, not having, you know, depth of knowledge and understanding of the Word of God, we will misunderstand many of the statements that he says and makes about this matter or that matter. And he said, this is what you're going to tell him. And he says to Moses, and I know that the king of Egypt will not give you leave to go except by a mighty hand. So he already warned him to begin with, before he sent him back, that he's not going to listen, that he's going to harden his heart. And yet, shortly after Moses went to Egypt, as we're going to see, he got discouraged because Pharaoh didn't do it. It made it even worse. And then Moses began to complain to God, you told me that you're going to bring him and you didn't. That is, you're going to bring Israel out of Egypt, and you haven't done that. And he totally forgot because of that, as it happens to many of us. God makes promises to us, but as soon as something goes wrong, we totally forget about the promises, and we just begin to complain. Well, how come? Instead of waiting to, in other words, stand still, patient, enduring, overcoming, whatever comes in between, until the end, until the salvation of God comes. You see? And we don't function like that. And Moses at this point still is not, he's going to show us that he's not functioning that way yet. He too had to grow in grace and knowledge and faith and understanding and really comprehending what God is all about. He keeps his word. And so he said, he's not going to let you except by mighty hand, and I will put forth my hand and smite Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in the midst of thereof. And after that, he will let you go. You see, God was going to make a point. You think that So-and-so is the god of the Nile, and so-and-so is the god of these animals, and so-and-so is the god of this and the god of that, and he's going to show them in every single area that they are false gods. And he's going to show that to his own people, and that was the main point, because his own people were idol worshippers and worshipped all the idols of Egypt to one degree or the other. Some of them were still righteous. Some of them still maintained the faith. But the majority of Israel were corrupt, just like they are today. Every form of religion, form of godliness, but they deny the power thereof. They've got their own ideas, their own concepts. And how many of us are in this category to one degree or the other, thinking that we're doing great? And so that's what God was going to show Egypt and his own people. And obviously, Egypt finally realized when he had done all those things that he is God. But unfortunately for his own people, they haven't learned that and they haven't to this very day. They constantly went back to those idols and to Egypt and to Babylon. And they're still in it, largely. Most of the children of Israel, they're still in Babylon. And many of us are still in it to one degree or the other. And God commands all of us to come out of it. And so he says, in contrast to the punishment he's going to bring upon Egypt, in verse 21 he said, when that happens, when the deliverance comes, I will give these people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And so he's going to be named as the God who gives favor. That's what he said, I hear, Asher, I hear, I will be that I will be. Whatever I'm going to do and accomplish, this is what my name is going to be. So don't limit me in essence, otherwise you go into idol worship. And so he says, and it shall come to pass that when you go, you shall not go empty. And that's the law of God. You know, the hire is worthy of his labor. And they were laboring very hard in the land of Egypt. And God is going to pay them. And he's going to make Egypt pay them. And that's why he always takes care of everything. God always is faithful in paying wages. Either good wages or bad wages. That's what it says. The wages of sin, you see, is death. But in contrast, those who are righteous, eternal life. In verse 22, it says something that is very interesting for us to notice. So we understand what is that captivity, what form, what kind of captivity they had. It says, but every woman shall ask of her neighbor, who is her neighbor? An Egyptian. So they lived in the midst of Egypt. You see, had they all been in concentration camps, you know, in the mud piles, you wouldn't find this situation. But they were still living in their own homes, in their own neighborhoods. God never, you know, that is, Pharaoh never took them out of those areas. Didn't put them all in labor camps. You know, the false concept that you see in the Ten Commandments, to one degree, even though, you know, they still show their homes there. But, you know, their own neighbors were Egyptians. So he says, but every woman shall ask of her neighbor and of her that sojourns in her house. What does that mean? The children of Israel, as I was explained earlier, had slaves. And some of them were Egyptians. And others were, you know, whatever foreigners were in the land. You see, that was the state of affairs in which the children of Israel were. They were still well-to-do. They were just enslaved at the same time. You know, we've got our form of slavery, which is obviously different, you know, more benign. Well, you've got our own form of slavery. We may have a lot of money in the bank, but we're slaves to taxes, to bills. We're slaves to the IRS, to the government, to this and that and the other person. You see, we, you know, we've got our own form of slavery, and yet we still have our own riches too with us at the same time. And we get older, and they take our money away from us, put us in an old home, and then we die, and they come after us again, you know, with estate taxes. You know, we're slaves until the day we die and beyond that. And so, even though they had hard bondage, and all the young men, you know, the abled men, that is, probably from 20 to whatever, you know, from whatever age they could really work hard, they've been taken and worked, you know, to the bone, so to speak, and still they haven't taken away from them their cattle, their riches, their homes. So it was not, you know, the real sense of slavery that people understand. And the captivity that God sent his people to was always that kind of a captivity to one degree or the other. And later on was even better, as in the case as we read with the people that were taken to Babylon, the first captivity. Jeremiah told them, well, you know, buy fields, plant vineyards, you know, seek the peace of the city. Well, what kind of captivity is that? Yet they are called the captivity. And those that came later on were also in that condition. And all the children of Israel that were taken to captivity, they were all placed in, well, you know, in towns and suburbs and all that. Today you will be extremely glad to be placed in such a condition. And have your own land, your own farm. You see, that's not captivity in the sense that we saw in the concentration camp, you know, recently in modern history, where everything was taken away from them and they had absolutely nothing, and no freedom of movement, certainly. So that's a different one. And so he says, every woman shall ask of her neighbor and of her that sojourns in her house jewels of silver and jewels of gold. So here it is, somebody lives in your own home, you see, a slave of yours that has gold and silver and jewels and all that, and raiment, and you shall put them upon your sons and upon your daughters, and you shall spoil the Egyptians. And obviously, all the people that live in your midst. But Moses continues, chapter 4 and verse 1, and Moses answered and said, but behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice. And they will say, the Eternal, you know, Jehovah, you see, they all know the name, has not appeared unto you. You know, you're just lying. And many of them would remember him, that he was the one, you know, that was in the court of Egypt, and he fled. 40 years we don't see him, and now he appears, and he's trying again. And so he said, verse 2, and the Lord, and the Jehovah said unto him, what is it in your hand? And he said, a rod. And he said, cast it on the ground, and he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent. Now, serpent was one of the major gods of Egypt. And so, you know, that's going to be impressive to the children of Egypt, to the children of Israel, to Pharaoh. And so that's the reason why God used that. And so, when that happened, Moses fled from before it. And Jehovah said unto Moses, or the Lord said unto Moses, put forth your hand and take it by the tail. Don't be afraid. And that, again, you know, teaches you something, you know. Even though something may seem to be very bad, if God tells you to do it, He's not going to harm you. He's going to do it. He's not going to do it, you know, to your own harm. You see, do it. And when He says, thy will be done, and you do it, good comes out of it. And oftentimes, you know, when we have no faith, we say, oh, no, Lord, I'm not going to touch that snake. No way. You see? And that goes for many other things that God tells us, do it. And we say, no, I'm not going to do it. It looks bad. In other words, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, and I know better. And I'm the judge, and you are not. And so Moses does that, and he laid hold on it, and it became a rod in his hand. So it turned back to what it used to be. So faith is being built now into Moses, that even the God of Egypt, the serpent, has no power, and it is in the hand of God. You see, so God is the one that has control over the serpent. That's becomes a part of his name. And then verse 5 we read, he said, that they may believe that the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, you know, the Elohim of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob, has appeared unto you. You see, that's going to give them a proof, you know, since they have no faith, obviously, and God knows they have no faith, and Moses has no faith, and knows that they have no faith, and he himself is not that much of a faithful person at this point. He still needs the assurances of God. And Jehovah said furthermore unto him, or the Lord said unto him, put now your hand into your bosom. And he put his hand into his bosom. And when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous, as white as snow. So God is in charge of the you know, creature of the field, you know, all those gods. God is in charge of healing, you see, of diseases, of bringing it and taking it. And, you know, as God says, you know, I wound and I also heal. You know, I kill and I make alive. You see, I can turn into a serpent and turn it back into a rod. In other words, don't box me in anything. So the names of God should never be used, one name or two names or three names, as a limiting factor for God. That's idol worship. And people are engaged in it to this very day. You see, God is everything. That's what it means. I hear, sure, hear. Whatever I'm going, you know, I'm going to be, I'm going to be. Whatever I'm going to do, whatever I'm going to accomplish in your sight, that's what I am. You see, don't think that I'm limited to this and not to that. And later on in the wilderness, you know, the children of Israel use these very words. Okay, we know that God did this and this and that, but can he do this? Can he bring us bread from heaven? Can he bring us water out of the rock? Well, if God will be what he will be, he can do anything. So we should never doubt God. And should never think, well, it's impossible. There's no such a thing as impossible in the vocabulary of God. And that's why his name is not limited. And eternal is just describes it, you know, a person who lives forever, but still does not describe what he can do. And so God has many names for that purpose,
for human consumption, so that we can begin to understand what he's talking about and to understand what he is all about. But even that is very limiting if we just begin to worship those names. You see, in the Jewish community, you know, the idol worship there, you know, in terms of names, when they're right, because, you know, they have good intent, yes, they're sincere in that, they do not want the name of God defiled, and so if they write something in an article, in a paper, instead of writing the real name, you know, they began from Babylon, when they came out of Babylon, to use euphemisms for God, and now when they write it in articles, you see it in English, they don't put God, which is not his name to begin with, you see, that's an anglicized form of the German name. So that's not his name. And in the true sense, it just means ruler, deity. And so they put G-D, you see, or they abbreviate many things like that. Well, that's idol worship when you think about that. In its true sense, because God is not limited, and so, you know, to play these kind of games, even though you are sincere in that, you know, a lot of people are sincere, but, you know, sincerity is not a real good currency if there is no truth behind it. You know, you can be sincere and bring the pig before God. You know, you're sincere. That's what you believe. That's what you understand. That's what you've been told. God is not going to accept it. Your sincerity beside the point. You see? So we have to understand that too. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. And this is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.